It's hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? I need to express some frustration with Deshaun Watson for ruining massages for the rest of us. At 1:30, the University of Arizona women's hoops coach has further endeared herself to this show by saying something sexist about men's basketball players. And in mere minutes, it's our weekly chat with Dustin McComas of Orange Bloods. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. Before we get to Dustin, a little Masters check-in for you. Mr. Rose has woken up. Justin Rose had a shaky start, and by shaky, I mean four bogeys on the front nine, but he really has enjoyed the back nine. Yesterday, in the last 11 holes, he went 9-under. Today, he has birdied 13 and 14, so he's sitting at 6-under. That's where the lead is now. Leishman's at -5, little group at -4, and Matsuyama and some at -3. Right behind him is Jordan Spieth. He's -2 for the tournament. He threw 9 holes today. Scottie Scheffler, look out for that former Longhorn. He's found red numbers, -1 for the tournament. He's through 13. He is 2-under for his round today. Let me see exactly where Scottie did that. He birdied 2, 3, 8, and he just eagled 13. Good for you, Mr. Scheffler. Nice round there, and he is only 5 shots off the lead. We will keep you up to date on the Masters. Let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline and talk to another Longhorn. He's probably not as good a golfer, but I'm sure he could hang with Scottie Scheffler. It's Dustin McComas, orangebloods.com. Dustin, how are you swinging them these days?
Terribly, but I can drink beer really well, so I guess that makes me a pretty average golfer.
Dude, I'll bet you Scottie Scheffler could put him away.
For sure.
He is a tall drink of water. He's got a lot of places to put the drinks.
Yeah, that's an advantage I don't have, although sometimes my gut just keeps getting bigger, so I guess that's just kind of, I do have a place to put him, but yeah, he's definitely got the size advantage.
Exactly. All right, before we jump into the Longhorn stuff, Dustin, I know you are a bit of a music fan yourself. We are saying goodbye to DMX today, and I kind of feel bad that I don't know exactly who DMX was. I haven't listened to a lot of DMX. Did you listen to a lot of DMX? Do you own DMX? Where does he fit kind of for you musically?
You know, he got really popular when I was in middle school. That kind of – and, like, I mean, that's – I listened to a ton of DMX in middle school and some in high school as well. So, yeah, he wasn't in my daily cycle, you know, when I'm listening on Spotify to my playlist and things like that. But I definitely grew up listening to DMX a lot. You know, it's kind of one – it's like, dang, you know. I remember certain moments in my life where, like, I was listening to DMX with friends. He's definitely somebody I grew up listening to.
Dustin, in terms of football, we are only 15 days away from the spring game. I know Longhorn fans are – they want every little nugget that you guys can find them outside of – who's going to be the starting quarterback? What do they look like? Who's getting the reps? I'm sure that is number one. What's the second thing you guys are seeing on message boards? Like, what's that next thing Longhorn fans are really focused on?
I don't know if there's a clear second thing, but for me personally, I was heading into this most curious about the linebackers, and that's something that's been a really popular topic with Orange Bowl subscribers and Texas fans online. It's that linebacker group, especially once the news came out that DeMar Van Overshoen had that shoulder injury and he's going to be sidelined for the spring. You're kind of looking at the depth chart in the roster like, hey, who's going to step up and play linebacker? And then Juwan Mitchell thing in the transfer portal. So I think one of the biggest developments so far is, you know, the people mentioning David Benda and just kind of the buzz that's surrounding him. It's a guy that he wasn't on the field much last season, but I feel like every time he was, I noticed him. You know, he's just a really physical guy, you know, good-looking linebacker. Just looks like one of those guys that can run and hit really hard, and that's what he does. And, you know, had the Alamo Bowl performance. And, you know, they need some of these linebackers to step up. And that's one position to where you didn't want to get through the spring and have some guys in a depth chart position by default just because there wasn't really anybody else to put there. And it's like, well, this guy was a highly rated recruit. He played a little bit last year. That's who we're going with right now. No, you wanted, if you're a Texas fan, you wanted to hear some names that are legitimately standing out and earning their place. And I think that, you know, the linebacker position in general has been something I've been following. And the mentions recently of David Benda, I think should have Texas fans excited.
So back to the quarterback discussion as we get closer to the spring game. I was reading Orange Blood's practice reports this week and you guys covering things. And just it really does feel like Sark's going out of his way to not reveal a ton, not show the hand. But in the end, I saw it pointed, I think it was Jason Sukumel of Orange Blood's pointing it out of, you know, there were equal reps, everything feels equal, but Casey Thompson seems to be the guy getting the first of the reps. Do you think that ultimately is going to matter in terms of Casey Thompson will be the first guy to go out, let's say for the spring game, first time we see an offense? Do you think it's going to be Thompson getting those first snaps?
I do. I don't know how much it's going to matter. I think that those guys are going to be split, you know, evenly or as close to it as possible throughout the spring, you know, and probably into the early parts of the summer as well. I think that's when that competition will really heat up in terms of, okay, somebody, you know, they're going to have to pick somebody eventually. So, I expect Thompson to be that first guy, but I'm not sure it really signals anything other than you got to put a guy out there and he's the one that actually played some last season. So I think one of the more peculiar things, and I don't know if this is because they had the COVID pause or whatever. It's been weird. It's like, oh yeah, football practice is back again after they had that pause. But, you know, usually there's like a lot of hyperbole or stuff thrown around about quarterbacks whenever there's a battle like this. Like, oh my gosh, so-and-so threw three touchdowns in practice and this guy bounced the ball into the turf. Like, you know, you kind of that stuff would just kind of hit the internet, you know, and you'd have to, you know, figure out if any of it's actually real or not. There really hasn't even been much of that conversation, which I don't know what that means. I don't know if that just means these guys are really even. I don't know if that means that, hey, they're just doing a really good job of keeping that position battle under locks. But I've just found that interesting. But, yeah, I do expect Thompson to be that guy, but I don't think it really means anything.
Talking about Dustin McComas, orangebloods.com. And, again, 15 days away from spring practice as the Longhorns are getting ready. How about a running back discussion? We were just talking about it. Bijan Robinson, Roschon Johnson. Where are the – from what you guys are hearing – are those snaps looking pretty equal as well, or is Steve Sarkisian maybe going to do what Longhorn fans were hoping Tom Herman would do, which is give the ball to Bijan Robinson and then keep doing it?
Yeah, Bijan's name has come up more this week. You know, with the pause and everything, you just sometimes when you don't hear about guys, I kind of wonder, you know, were they held out or something like that. I'm not trying to imply he had COVID or anything, but just, you know, in this era, you guys – you know, when a team goes on pause, you got to ask, like, okay, do they have all their personnel? But he's a guy that's been mentioned more this week. I fully expect him to be the guy that dominates the touches. But, you know, Texas is talking up Roschon Johnson. You know, he got to come out and talk to the media this week, which, you know, that's not an accident when, you know, they don't send average Joes out there that aren't going to play to talk to the media. I think that this coaching staff has really understood what the last coaching staff did, which he's a good football player that can do a lot of things. He can catch the ball in the backfield. He can really pass protect and block well. He can pick up some tough yardage. Like, he's an underrated athlete, but I fully expect Bijan Robinson to dominate those touches. And I think that, you know, we had this in the war room, and I wasn't surprised to read it that, you know, his receiving skills in particular have stood out. Like, Najee Harris was a fantastic receiver out of the backfield. He was like that as a high school prospect. And Bijan Robinson was like that too, you know, as a high school prospect when you get into those camp settings and things like that. So I think that he's going to feast in that type of role. But also, too, you know, Roschon Johnson is capable of filling that sort of role as well coming out of the backfield. But I fully expect Bijan to be the guy that dominates those touches.
Dustin, sidebar, since you mentioned him, how much do you and other Steeler fans want Najee Harris right now?
Oh, man. You know, it's funny. I saw a tweet earlier today from a fantasy football analyst, and he's like, if the Steelers take Najee Harris at 24, he's immediately a top 12 fantasy running back. And I'm like, yep, he would be, you know, because I have been a huge Najee Harris fan. I don't know if I wrote this or said it on a podcast a long time ago when I saw him at the Rivals 5-Star Challenge. I go, that's the kind of guy that would get me in trouble with the NCAA because I would pay that dude to come to my school. Like, he's worth every dang penny, you know, to go out and get a guy like that. So, yeah, I'd be thrilled if the Steelers went that route.
Yeah, and the connection between Najee and Bijan Robinson to me is interesting because if I'm Steve Sarkisian, man, I'd show running backs the box score from that national title game until I pass out. Because to me, what they did with Najee Harris throughout his career, but then in that title game, I mean, that's it. What was it, 20? Something like 20 total touches in that game, and he had 3 touchdowns, I think?
Yeah. In that game, you know, they started kind of not sluggish, but, you know, they weren't really having an easy time running the football. They stuck with it. It wasn't like, oh, no, we got to scrap our Najee Harris touches. It's like, no, we're going to keep giving it to him. Like, this is going to work. So, yeah, that would definitely be a box score I'd bring up and say, see this? You know, yeah, we have that really good quarterback, and Devontae Smith went nuts, but our running back still got his touches and scored, too.
No doubt. Talking with Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. He covers all kinds of Longhorn stuff, including basketball. Dustin, we talked to you about Chris Beard last week and the press conference and all that. So we were talking earlier about Jalen Tyson, the guard out of the Plano area that's now in the 2021 group and is going to be coming to Texas. So you follow basketball and recruiting. The idea, I think, for Chris Beard, for multiple reasons, is he's coming to Texas, and one of the reasons might be, can he get guys to come to Texas that weren't going to come to Lubbock? Talk to me about Jalen Tyson. Would he fit into that category, or is he a guy that might have ended up in red and black anyway?
He's a guy that would have ended up in red and black anyway, but it's not because, you know, he wasn't an elite prospect. I think that he's kind of a classic example of, you know, a guy like Andrew Jones, who was underrated for a long time, basically a non-4-star national top 150 kind of player. And all of a sudden, you know, people, he blew up. You know, his play, people started noticing his play. He performed really well on the AAU level. Tyson didn't have that AAU season that most guys have, but he still ended up being the number 34 player in the country. Chris Beard and his staff did a really, really good job of getting in on him super early and establishing that relationship. They were one of the first high major programs to prioritize him, and they were rewarded for it. But I do think the point about getting more of those types of players at Texas is absolutely true. It's something that Beard alluded to in his press conference. I don't remember the exact quote, but he kind of talked about playing against schools like Texas and Michigan State and some of the other schools, and, like, you know, saying to himself, man, I like to coach those guys. Those guys being those national top recruits that so many of those programs get, that a Texas Tech was starting to get, but wasn't always going to have access to compared to a Texas and those types of programs. So I definitely think it's something that factors into it. They offered a guy last night, Ty Washington, you know, one of the top uncommitted players in the 2021 class, a really, really good point guard, a guy that Kansas is after and UCLA is after. I'm not sure Texas Tech would be firmly in the picture for a guy like that, but a Texas will be, you know, because they're right up there with Kansas and UCLA. So, yeah, I definitely think that was part of the allure of Texas, was having more access to recruiting that tier of player and getting more of those guys on a consistent basis.
It's got to be a nice thing. Certainly Longhorn fans are hoping that will be the case. Again, Jalen Tyson added to that 2021 group for Texas. And if you're just tuning in, Royce Hamm and Donovan Williams ending up at UNLV. Dustin, can you give me any particular reason why it ended up being Vegas for those guys?
I don't know, but the UNLV, they've gotten 4 transfers, and they've all been from the Big 12. So I guess Kevin Kruger is just trusting his dad, you know, with some scouting reports and
right.
things like that. Like, hey, man, who did you like in the league that's transferring or something like that? So it's like, you know, the Big 12 out west for UNLV. So, you know, I'm sure the style of play and the available playing time, you know, if Kevin runs anything like Juan did at Oklahoma, it's a really fun offensive system to play in. They do a really good job of getting switches and giving guys opportunities to go one-on-one or exploit mismatches and things like that. And it could be a fun system to play in.
All right, Dustin, as we transition to baseball, let me throw some stats out just in case Ivan Melendez's family's listening right now. In his last 4 games, he has 4 multiple hit games. He's batting .722, 3 jacks, 5 doubles, 9 RBIs, 7 runs scored. Wow. What's most impressive to you about him? And is this one of those guys that you saw coming and you think, okay, this is what we've been waiting on? Or is he over expectation right now?
No, I saw this coming. You know, he was a guy they talked up a lot in the fall. And, you know, he's got the most raw power on the team. And when I first heard that, I was like, well, Zach Zuvia is still on the roster, you know? But sure enough, the people weren't lying. I mean, the ball he hit – that Tuesday game. Oh, I don't know, man, if I've seen a ball hit there in a long time. The last time I saw balls hit like that were with the old bats when Anthony Rendon and Rice were in Austin for a regional, and he was hitting line drives and hitting cars in the parking lot. Like, right. That's the last time I've seen balls hit like that. So, yeah, it's, you know, I was the swing and miss stuff earlier in the season when he was striking out. I was like, I really like the swing. He had some natural hitting ability. He's not just a power guy. You know, he'll spray a line drive the opposite way. And that's what's been so impressive, is that it's a total fields approach. I mean, yeah, the power really shows to the pull side, but he'll drive line drives up the middle and to right center. And, you know, he was joking with his teammates in the dugout after the home run Wednesday night that he got jammed. You know, he still hit the ball out the right center. And just Falk, like, that's incredible power. But, yeah, this is a guy that has some natural hitting ability, too. Now, he's not going to hit whatever, 372 or whatever he's hitting right now. He's not going to hit that all season. There's going to be some ebbs and flows with this. But he's in a really good place. He made a minor adjustment with his hands and his stance. But really, it's just a confidence thing. And, you know, sometimes those guys, when they make that jump in competition, kind of get their feet wet a little bit, get their confidence going, and then they can really, really take off. But I think this guy is for real. I think he's a really, really good hitting talent. You know, I know some scouts have kind of picked my brain about him, and like I'm in on this guy as a hitter. So this is the Melendez, Texas spot that they were going to get. Not a home run every game kind of a guy, but that sort of middle of the order legitimate power presence, but also a guy too that can really cover the plate and flat out hit as well.
And is he the kind of guy moving forward that people are going to see also at an infield position, or are they going to use him as a DH?
I think moving forward, he's going to be a guy that's capable of playing first base. I know they were encouraged by the development he showed at third base. And look, I don't know if there's a better place in the country for infielders to try to get better with their glove than Texas. Troy Tulowitzki is a wizard with that stuff. We've seen it with Trey Faltini. We've seen it with Cam Williams. We're seeing it with Mitchell Daly. We've seen it with Zach Zubia to some degree, although a lot of that was Zach getting himself into really, really good shape and changing his body. So I think in the future you could see him get some defensive opportunities. But right now they've got a lineup that they really like, and they're locking it in every single day, and those guys are producing.
They are looking good, and the purple part of the schedule continues. They had SFA in on Wednesday, and it's K-State starting tonight for 3. And remember, they're right in the middle of a 10-game homestand if you want to get out there and check out the Texas baseball team. Dustin, always appreciate it. That's Dustin, orangebloods.com, at DMcComasOB on Twitter. Have a good weekend, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys, take care. Have a good weekend.
Good stuff.
Thanks, Austin.
Good stuff there as well. And, yes, Pittsburgh Steeler Nation kind of focused in on that Najee Harris thing. I would be, too. 6:30 tonight for Texas. Ty Madden on the Hill. Apparently, K-State's got a big-time Friday starter that they like a lot. Ty's coming in with a 1.52 ERA. You heard me give the numbers on Melendez. Definitely check out number 17 right now for the Texas baseball team. He is raking. Texas is 22-8, 7-2 in conference. They've won their first 3 conference series. Let's see what they look like against K-State. Up next, speaking of see what they look like, some NFL players may look different to you in 2021 if a rule change happens. Plus, we'll tell you about one of our favorite new coaches in all of college sports. Plus, we got some fun questions for you today. I got a Hugh Hefner question for you, and we're trying to figure out exactly who DMX was. Trey thinks he knows. A lot of our listeners think they know. If you're a rap expert, we're going to need your help. Jump on in. This is The Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Rolling Suicide.
Rolling through a Friday show, and coming up at 2 o'clock, we're going to get into a deep musical discussion. What does the music say about you? That's one of my favorite wacky bands, isn't it? Was that System of a Down?
System of a Down, and really aggressive music. supposedly says something about the person.
All right. I can't wait to hear about that because I do like some aggressive music. So I can't wait to figure out exactly what that says about me. They've been breaking it down. I've been reading through this article a little bit. Millions and millions of data points that they've had. It's not like they've just had 20 or 30 people take this test.
There's three different bits of research, I guess, that do encompass a different amount of statistical information that they take. One has to do with the Myers-Briggs. There was one University of Cambridge study, and then a third one that I'm not recalling what its roots were, but they all were looking at slightly different things and came up with very similar results.
Yeah, one of these tests has been taken by more than 388 million people.
Yeah, that's the online Myers-Briggs test.
Wow, that's interesting. Maybe you and I should take that test and see what it says.
Oh, I've got a mom who's a psychologist. I've taken that test throughout my life.
Okay, fair enough. All right, it is Friday. We'll get into some NFL and some college hoop stuff here in just a second. But before that, let me update you on the Masters. Jordan Spieth had birdied number 10 and gotten to minus 3, but he bogeyed 12. That darn 12. Little par 3 over the water seems easy. It's never easy. Scottie Scheffler also at minus 2. He's through 15 holes now, and those two guys, former Longhorns, of course, are now 5 back of the lead because Justin Rose continues to love the back nine. He had already birdied 13 and 14. Now he's birdied 16 over the water. So he's at minus 7 again. That's where he was to start the day. So the lead is back to minus 7. Leishman's at minus 5. And a group including Cameron Champ is at minus 4. Justin Thomas also at minus 4. To throw a big name at you. Not a lot of other big names doing well, though. Dustin Johnson plus 3, Mickelson plus 3, DeChambeau plus 2. If Bryson can get a little something going, maybe. Bubba Watson even par as we check in at the Masters. I think they're going to go 2 o'clock again today for big ESPN coverage.
Okay.
And then over the weekend, you get CBS. ESPN Plus gives you extra stuff. This morning, Trey, I woke up. I turned ESPN Plus on about 8:35, 8:40. And I just was watching, they just had the Justin Rose group followed by the Phil Mickelson group. And just went back and forth, just showed everybody. It was pretty cool.
Nice. It sounds like that really is a good reason to have ESPN Plus right now.
Yeah. If you're a golf freak, and like I said, even if you want to do like a 7-day trial and then duck back out, or just call one of your friends that you know has ESPN Plus and see if they'll let you use the old login. Might be a good idea. All right, Trey, so do you have any issues? You're a big NFL fan. You play some fantasy. You watch games. Any issue if the NFL changes its rules on what positions can wear what number? Because apparently they're maybe working towards it.
No, and maybe it's because I pay closer attention to college football on a yearly basis where they don't have those restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
You have basic parameters that certain position groups operate on, the offensive line most specifically. But it's all bets off for pretty much every other position. Quarterbacks, I guess, don't tend to go much past 19,
yeah,
with the rare exception, like a Doug Flutie. But, no, I have no issues with this, and I'm glad the NFL is loosening its grip on the rules just a little bit.
So here's the way it would work. Quarterbacks, punters, kickers, they're still at 1 through 19. That wouldn't change. Offensive linemen would still be 50 through 79. But here's what would change, the skill stuff. Defensive backs and linebackers could wear any number from 1 to 49 if they wanted to. Running backs, fullbacks, tight ends, halfbacks, and wide receivers could all pick from 1 to 49 and 80 to 89. Your fullback could wear 85 if he wanted to.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess we've seen that with running backs a little bit, like the Ty Montgomerys of the world, who wore number 88, I believe.
True, but didn't he kind of start as a tight end and then...
I think he started as a wide receiver, but ends up playing more running back throughout his career. But he had already been indoctrinated, I guess, as a wide receiver. So he was allowed to continue to wear that 80s number on other teams once he was done in Green Bay.
What I like about the story, Trey, is it feels like there's energy among the players to talk about it. Apparently some guys have been superimposing their old college numbers on their pro jerseys and putting out pictures and stuff.
Mm.
And then some guys, like Stephon Diggs, are saying, no, I've gotten a lot of support with 14. I'm gonna stay put with my number. I'm not changing my number because this is, you know, I've had good success with it. So just
was he Florida State?
No, Diggs was Maryland.
That's right.
Diggs was Maryland. But a guy I always think of in this discussion is like a LaDainian Tomlinson. He rocked 5 at TCU and he looked badass doing it.
There's a guy at Texas right now who
there you go.
Does a good job at running back as five.
Jerome Bettis at Notre Dame, I believe, wore six. Big old, you know, Jerome Bettis running back. And then he had to get to the NFL and change. I like the idea that you wouldn't have to change. I like the idea that a Derrick Brooks, who wore 10 at Florida State and made it look awesome, that he could still wear it if he wants to. So the Chiefs brought that up because apparently they were running into problems where guys were coming to the team and there weren't enough numbers to go around. And so they wanted to be able to expand the idea a little bit. The NFL's really considering it. So we may get to this season, and you have all these different guys that could wear a tight end. A tight end could wear number four if he wanted to.
What position group were they running into that problem with?
Well, it's them, so probably slot receivers.
Yeah.
I mean, You're right about that. It's the Chiefs. Quick slot receivers. So look for that in the NFL coming up. Also, don't look now, but there is a coach in the college ranks that's gaining more and more popularity. Although, Trey, she might have. We're maybe about to test how much people love Arizona's women's basketball coach. Where are you on her today?
So you had mentioned her a little bit on this show, and off the air, you had mentioned that you really dig her for some of the things that I guess she was guilty of. She gave the finger to the opposition at one point.
No. She gave the finger in a team huddle when she was saying, they gave us a 3% chance to win. F them. We won the game. She did not direct that to the opponent.
Didn't the middle finger go towards where the opponent was standing, though?
No.
Okay.
No. She was doing
it. You're saying that was during a huddle.
It was in
and
a,
the other team was in a huddle down the court or something.
Game was over. They had won. They'd beaten UConn. And she was saying they gave you a 3% chance to win. Well, guess what? F them all.
Oh.
We won the game. And she meant the critics.
F the critics. Okay.
She meant the critics. And the
middle finger to the critics.
Exactly.
Has probably given middle fingers to opponents before, too, based on her actions.
I don't know about that, but she's pretty feisty.
And now we have some audio of her taking a shot at the coachability of men's college basketball players.
All right.
So she was on a podcast called Afterwards, hosted by John Jay and Rich. John Jay is one person, Rich is the other.
And this is Arizona women's coach Adia Barnes.
Yes,
is who we're talking about.
That's her name.
Yeah.
And here is the question and her response.
All right.
And also some laughter in between.
Would you ever consider, if there was enough support, coaching the men's basketball team at U of A?
Absolutely not. Not zero interest. Hey, guys, don't listen to crap. No. You tell a guy to go right, he's going left three times. Like, no, they don't listen.
That's hilarious.
So guys don't listen to crap, and now some people are upset that she said something so sexist, Chad, as to give her opinion on why she wouldn't want to coach men's basketball versus women's basketball.
I have no problem with it on its face as long as we're willing to accept the opposite. If you had Rick Pitino on a radio show and you said, hey, coach, would you ever consider coaching women? And he says, absolutely not. Women's basketball players are too blank. And he filled in the blank with something. I don't know what he would say, but he just had an opinion.
And by the way, Rick Pitino wouldn't do that because he was one of the trailblazers with regards to bringing women onto his staff at the college level.
That's well played. That's well done. So I guess if you're willing to take it on the other side, you have to, you know, to kind of take this for what it is. But that is a specifically sexist thing to say. I mean, that's a huge generalization. Men's basketball players don't listen. They won't listen to coaching. Yeah, it's a sexist thing to say. Now, I'm not going to flip out on her too much because it is, you know, she's somebody that I've enjoyed kind of watching and watching the vibe of. But if you're going to be consistent about it, you got to ask yourself, what would happen if somebody said something similar about women's basketball players? I think people would flip out. What if a men's coach said, I would never coach women, and they laughed just the same way, and then he said, I don't know, women's basketball players are too emotional. What if he just said that? They're too emotional. Every time you try to coach them, all they do is cry or something like that. If that's where he or she went, would they get a negative reaction? Because I feel like people would lose their minds if a coach said that.
I think that the criticism that she levied was pretty innocuous. Guys don't listen.
Right.
Versus bringing emotion into the equation. Like, guys don't pay attention versus, well, women have periods. Like, there's a very big difference in those two bits of reason as to why you wouldn't do one or the other, right?
But right.
So I think that her rationale is very harmless, and it sounded to me like she was also saying it pretty tongue-in-cheek, too.
Mm-hmm.
So taking the individual into account and how woke she tries to conduct herself on a day-to-day basis, which is not very... I'm talking about the fake wokeness of 2021.
Right.
I have no issues with what she said.
Yeah,
as a guy who doesn't do a very good job of listening sometimes.
I will be interested, and there's a lot of people that don't listen well. And I don't know that men listen any better or worse than women do.
Men are generally thought of as not listening as well.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll see what the ultimate reaction is.
It's a stereotypical opinion, if nothing else.
It's a stereotype.
Like, it's a stereotype, and stereotypes can be ignorant. And you're right, it's not... Yeah. You can compare a man and a woman, pick two random people out. Right. One's going to pay attention better than the other. It could be the man. It could be the woman.
Right.
But generally speaking, guys are thought of as just being either inside their own heads or distracted by things and not listening closely enough.
And that's why I brought up the emotional thing, because that's another stereotype on the other side, that women in general are more emotional than men.
And actually, the fact that they're so emotional is why you would have a harder time getting away with it as a men's coach. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe. I hadn't thought of it that way. But in terms of just the comment itself, as sensitive as everybody is to comments, I just think if somebody that coach men said that about women's basketball players, I think a lot of people would react and kind of flip out on them.
So are you upset with what she said?
No, not really.
So you're feigning outrage for other people?
No, I'm not feigning outrage. Okay. I'm just all about consistency. What I'm saying is, if you're going to get upset at what she said, or excuse me, if you're going to be entertained by what she said, just make sure you'd be entertained by the opposite. That's all I'm saying. If a guy in a laughing situation and you felt like it was tongue-in-cheek, if he did the, oh, no, come on, are you kidding me? Girls are way too emotional to deal with me. I'd probably coach him too hard. You'd have to accept that if you'll accept this, is what I'm saying.
Do guys not get as much of a pass because we have had it much easier throughout the history of humans?
I mean, that can be part of the discussion, too. I think that's part of the discussion. And I do think, you know, it had a fun vibe to it. The immediate reaction was interesting to me. When she said absolutely not, and everyone on the radio show just busted out laughing. Because my reaction would have just been, what do you mean absolutely not? I would have been like silent. Just like, wait a minute, let's hear what? Absolutely not?
I think that in the moment, you may not have let out a chortle. You may not have let out a gut laugh.
It may have been.
But I think you would have responded with maybe a little bit of a snort laugh. Yeah, or interview laugh.
Right, a little interview reaction laugh.
It wouldn't have been. That was overboard. The laugh was overboard. But, you know, it's a podcast. Maybe they had just taken a big hit off the blunt right before they spoke with her.
She's hardcore, man. Adia Barnes. And does not apologize for the stuff. That's the other thing I like about her.
Yeah.
Is right or wrong, get mad at her or not, she did not apologize for the whole flip-off thing in the huddle, because she said, that was my huddle, it was a closed huddle, and the camera just happened to catch me. No, I'm not going to apologize for my emotion. That's what we're about. That's what I coach my players to be. We're an emotional team. I'm an emotional coach. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, there's a certain respect that I have for an individual who doesn't let the fact that they are a public persona affect how they operate.
Yeah.
And that can be a very fine line that you're walking there. She'll probably get herself in more trouble throughout her career as a women's basketball coach because she is so outspoken on things. But I respect that. It's like that Charles Barkley mentality on stuff where occasionally you will step in it and you'll say something that you have to apologize for, or walk back or whatever else. But it's a fun personality to keep an eye on in the meantime.
Yeah, we'll see what Adia Barnes does moving forward. That's definitely a sport that needs more personalities. It needs more variation of teams. It got a little bit of that in its tournament this year. Stanford and Arizona instead of UConn, instead of Tennessee, instead of Baylor. Getting a kind of a mix of personalities and get coaches and players that people like.
Personalities and lower rims, Chad.
Yeah, that's not yet. Not yet on the lower rims.
Oh, come on. I thought we had gotten there.
Smaller balls, not lower rims as of yet on the women's side of things. And quarters, that's the thing I think the men need to give a shot.
Way better than the men's game in that regard.
Give it a shot. Try the quarter system, fellas. See what it looks like. Adia Barnes won't coach you in the quarter system, but you can at least give it a shot. All right, coming up, it's Where Are We At in Society. Apparently, Trey is blaming Deshaun Watson for ruining massages for everybody. I don't get massages, so I don't know. Trey will lay that out for you. And then coming up at 2, we will talk about what your musical tastes could say about you, according to science. And at 2:30, it's why April 9th matters, including the death of DMX and the birthday of Hugh Hefner and the really bizarre question that it made me think of. That's all coming up on The Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, then I watch them roll away again.
Oh, nothing wrong with a little dock of the bay.
Yeah.
What does the scientific community say about someone who hates that song? Do they say they should be castrated? What do they say?
Yep, forced crash castration
forced,
it is.
That is what happens.
Now, we'll find out coming up after the top of the hour, because they do talk about people who enjoy that deeper, more reflective sort of music. Things that are more reflective lyrically.
Right, looking for a little more depth to the song. It certainly would be that way with Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. Otis Redding, right, for Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. Hope you're having a great Friday. Quick check of the Masters. Justin Rose is still up at -7. He's finished 72 today, so still -7. And Spieth birdies 13, so he's at -3. So, Jordan Spieth, only 4 shots back of the lead. There's golfers at -5 and -4 as well. We'll keep you up to date there. Justin Thomas, one of the guys at -4, by the way, if you need another name. All right, let's go Where Are We At in Society. Trey's mad at somebody.
Where are we at in society today?
That's right, Chad. I'm mad at freaking Deshaun Watson. I was getting a massage earlier today.
Uh-huh.
Now, the sort of massage that I am getting at this point in my life is one that doesn't necessarily involving stripped down to nothing in having a person rub you down on a massage table. I'm going and getting Thai massages now, which is okay. A lot of knees and elbows and heels and body weight getting into injured areas and you slowly moving those areas around. There's some active release technique that's involved as well.
Wait a minute. They literally knee you?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, it feels so good.
What are they suspended over with like ropes over the table?
She does have 2 ropes that she leans her body weight on to then get more leverage into jamming me.
All right. Fair enough. It's a good Tom Petty song, Jamming Me, from back in the day.
So I am not taking my clothes off with the Thai massage. The clothes can stay on. There's not a sheet going over me. But I was thinking about this today as I had an elbow going into my lat that Deshaun Watson has made me less comfortable in the situation if it's more of like that deep tissue Swedish massage where I am allowed to get down to my most comfortable and get under the sheet, then I'm less likely to do so now. That I'm probably going to be keeping my underwear on going forward and risking the break that exists when the masseuse is having to go over underwear to get to a hip or to go from hamstring to glute or something like that, because I don't want to give off that Deshaun Watson vibe. Like I'm trying to make something else happen when you ask me to roll onto my back.
Yeah, but I think if these women are correct, he did a little more than a vibe. I think you know how to act during a massage to where you're not transmitting anything like that. I think it's a little more than a vibe that he's being accused of, right?
I just don't even want anybody starting to go there now.
So now you're a little extra nervous,
like,
is what you're saying?
I feel like the unwritten rules of getting the table massage have now changed to where stripped down to your most comfortable is stripped down to your most comfortable as long as that's not beyond boxers.
I will tell you that the Deshaun Watson story has made me realize I may never get an official professional massage. I don't know that I was anyway, but this is the type of story that it's like it doesn't necessarily draw me towards the industry.
Well, you've seen Kevin and I massage one another on the previous iteration of shows that we did at this station.
Yes.
Kevin and I are very partial to that. That doesn't look at all appealing to you. having somebody rub your shoulders? Because there are certain people that don't like to be touched like that.
Oh, no. I could get into it in certain situations.
You could.
Yeah, I could.
Well, I would still suggest a massage.
Yeah.
Now, there's also a difference between going to somebody private and going to get a massage at Massage Envy or at one of these reflexology places around town where, come on, keep your clothes on there. That is very, it's more formal, I guess, than going into somebody's private business and having that happen. Like, you're probably seeing less, I don't know, riffraffs off the streets if you are in the private business versus working at Massage Envy as your first job outside of massage school.
Yeah, probably. That is probably.
Just for everybody's sanitary means, you should probably go ahead and keep the underwear on.
Would you also say that whether you are the massager or the massagee right now, should everybody just sort of unwritten rule, unwritten agreement, nobody discusses Deshaun Watson?
Well, I wanted to ask.
That shouldn't be discussed.
I wanted to ask her about it today if she's ever had somebody that's tried that with her. But again, I didn't want to come off as a creep that would even remotely suggest that I was considering going that way too.
Because if I have a discussion, like say I'm getting my hair cut and I have a discussion with that person about what's the weirdest thing somebody's ever done in the chair, what's the strangest thing they've ever said to you, that's a very different thing than if I was being massaged and I'm like half naked or all naked at the time and still asking the same question. That's totally different. It's a totally different discussion at that point.
Yeah, has a guy ever tried to nudge his thing over towards you when you're in that area?
There's
just no easy way to ask that.
Exactly. No, there's no easy way to deal with that. And by the way, we'll get into some updates on the Deshaun Watson story in Stems and Seeds. Apparently, if you are interested in knowing more of these names, and Rusty Harden is, there are more of the names that are going to be made public, and we'll get you some of that info coming up before we are out of here at about 2:50 or so on the show. So there's some Where Are We At in Society. Trey does it every day at about 1:45, digs into what's going wrong with the world, what's gotten too woke, what's gotten canceled, what needs to get canceled, what's going on. And we do have the continuation of the DMX conversation. Would you like to hear this analogy before the break?
Let's do it after the break because we are up on the commercial break right now.
All right.
And you have really sold the Jeff Howe response to all this. I'm fascinated to hear what he had to say.
Jeff Howe sent me a text with an analogy of who he believes DMX is. Because I'm asking the question, in the rap world, who is DMX? I don't know enough about it. I'm trying to figure it out. We're giving the rest in peace to DMX today at the age of 50. But just who was he? Jeff Howe sent me the text. I'll read that next. Then we'll get into what your musical taste could say about you from a scientific standpoint, from a personality standpoint. We'll get into all of that. Having some fun on a Friday. We'll keep you up to date on the Masters as well. Jordan Spieth trying to get back in the discussion. This is The Horn.